The time being 5:30 p.m, could I have some quiet, please, as we need to start our meeting? Thank you. Welcome to everyone. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome everybody to the meeting tonight on Monday the 15th of September 2025, and welcome to our member of the public gallery that we have here this evening, and to those who may be watching along at home. Time being 5:30 p.m, I now officially declare this meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations of 2025, and under these I'm required to advise you that A, an audio or audio-visual recording is being made of the meeting. B, all persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting. And C, language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I'll now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirmed,
thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the Acting CEO, Ms. Shakuti, the Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Mackey, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, our Coordinator, Statutory Planning, Ms. Melissa Stevenson, our Communications Officer, Mr. Heather, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. We have an apology from our CEO, Mr. Stewart. Confirmation of minutes. We're on page one. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 15 held on the 1st of September 2025 be confirmed as a true record. Looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday, the 8th of September, in relation to unpaid rates. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd just like to declare an interest in the the development application DA 2025-188, 12.1 is the item, just to say that I have had correspondence from the proponent, but I intend to stay in the room.
Thank you. I suspect we have all had correspondence from the development application person, so we can just make that assumption that we all have, but if there are any other declarations. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Just a declaration for item 15.2, and I'll be staying in the room.
Thank you very much. Any further ones? No, we'll move on. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Questions on notice in the public. If you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had two questions on notice. The first one from Mr. Ollie Burden with a response from Mr. Loxley, and that was in relation to line marking on Beach Road, Kingston. And another one from the same gentleman with a response from Mr. De Cruz with in relation to freeze on construction code. Takes us to... Oh, sorry, questions without notice from the public. I skipped. No questions without notice from the public. Thank you very much. We're now at questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question? The Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I did email a question through earlier and I did get a response, but I will ask it again because I have a feeling that Mr. Ollie Burton had a similar question. It was just regarding the new pedestrian crossing that's down at Beach Road, which is very exciting that it's now finally there, but I did notice that there was no zebra markings on it as yet, and so my question was, has it been marked as intended or is something they're going to change?
And I believe Mr. Mackey can assist us with that one.
Yes, through you, Mayor. The crossing will be marked with the zebra lines. We had troubles getting the service provider at the time and we're scheduling that in within the next 2 weeks.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is about the car park opposite us, the old Kingston Primary School car park, predominantly used by the U3A community group. And my question is simply, can Council please confirm that that car park is not it's not within the auspices of Council? And can we please just have an update if we do know what the time frame is for making that area accessible to vehicles once again, or any further information about that car park used predominantly by U3A?
Yeah. So that car park is not ours. It does belong, that entire property belongs to Libraries Tasmania, and as we know that they closed it at very short notice and stopped vehicle access and made it quite challenging for the users of the four building blocks to be able to access their classes in blocks A and B. I've met with two representatives of U3A, and they have serious concerns about what they've been told by Libraries Tasmania in terms of when their classes recommence for this semester. They've been told that they need to park across at Channel Court and then walk across the road where there is a small traffic island refuge in the middle, but their age demographic is, you know, they're senior citizens, many of them. A lot of them are carrying things to and from the classes that they attend. They run over 30 classes a week. They have hundreds of people who go through that building, and I think it's a safety risk for them to have to be crossing a road to get to it. The CEO, before he went on leave, did meet with Libraries Tasmania about what the options were. And they have asked whether we could provide some access through the end of our car park up to, so that they could get into part of the Libraries Tasmania car park is sealed with bitumen, and that is in a reasonable condition, and they would be keen to see cars park in there. But obviously that's not something that can happen overnight, because there is stormwater infrastructure that is in place where we would need, where they would need to construct access over from our car park in there. Even if they do that, that is only going to provide probably about a quarter of the number of parking spaces that they currently use. From my perspective, we haven't been able to get a timeline from them, but our team are working closely with them to ensure that we can provide all information to them so that they can make a decision on how they want to proceed. I think it's very disappointing that the car park facilities have been left as they are for the better part of 25 to 30 years and allowed to deteriorate to the point that somebody was injured, they did a risk assessment, and now they've closed off access to everyone. And it concerns U3A greatly that if it continues for much longer, that they're going to see people not willing to take the risk of crossing the road, and they're going to see their numbers diminish. So we will continue to work with them. I would like to see a major investment by Libraries Tasmania in that site to make it safe. But it is very much, unfortunately, their problem to solve, and they seem very unwilling at the moment to make any sort of investment.
Thank you, Mayor, for that comprehensive answer. I really appreciate the depth with which you shared the information that we have. My second question through you, Mayor, is about the CBOS short stay accommodation report for the September quarter. It records around the state 8,138 short stay listings in Tasmania. That's an increase of 295 over the previous quarter. For Kingborough, there are 589 short stays. My first question around this CBOS report is, number one, does Kingborough Council have a view about short stay accommodation impacts on rental affordability in our municipality?
The Acting CEO.
Through you, Mayor. I haven't had an opportunity to read the CBOS review. What I can say is we did form a view some years ago where it was looked at for Kingborough, and I believe in that work there wasn't, I suppose, a strong view that it was impacting rental availability. However, I believe, you know, that enough time has passed now, and I suppose the use or the number of short stay accommodations in our accommodation in our municipality warrants us revisiting that. So that is some work we probably need to go and go away, have a look at the CBOS report, and form a position on that as well.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. That question's really that the answer to that question was very helpful for this next one, which is does council currently strategically track the residential rental vacancy rate within Kingborough with a view to ensuring that there are affordable places to rent? Is that something that we have? I mean, if we're not strategically tracking that rental residential availability vacancy right now, is that something that we might do in the future?
The Acting CEO.
Through you, Mayor. I'm actually unsure of the answer to your question. It is potentially something that either our Director of Finance or Ms Stevenson, our Planning Coordinator, might be able to assist with in terms of the data that we do track and report. But to my knowledge, no, I don't think we do.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova. We're having some technical issues with the microphones. There's just a couple of things. Please bear in mind, I understand I'm getting feedback from people listening that the microphones are cutting in and out. So please make sure you're as close to them as I am. And also, it's really important that when you go to speak, you wait for me to give you the call so that then our communications person can activate your microphone. So that will be done by him. So we need you to sort of like wait for the call and then speak. Sorry, we will... The full complete system is on its way in the coming weeks. We just have to bear with this. So apologies to those who are listening at home who are having issues with it cutting in and out. But apparently, if you're this close, people can hear you. Okay, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Final question on the CBOS short stay accommodation report for the September quarter. And that question is, so we've established that, just for those who didn't hear, I asked about whether we will strategically track residential rental vacancy rates in the municipality. And now this question is, does Kingborough Council believe that we should play a role in shaping the conditions to reduce residential rents in Kingborough, or does Council think that the cost of renting residential dwellings in Kingborough is something that should be left entirely to the free market to determine and therefore is not an issue for Council to bother itself with?
The Acting CEO.
Through you, Mayor. That's a difficult question to answer. We have very limited ability to regulate or influence market trends in terms of rentals and, you know, what people, what's being asked for within the market. Where we can have some influence is through our strategic planning, which we, you know, actively, and you know, even through the draft LPS that we're transitioning to at the moment, ensuring that sufficient zoning is in place throughout our municipality for, you know, that is suitable for affordable housing, higher density housing. So that's where we can play a role. We can obviously advocate to external stakeholders that may have some influence, but being able to, I suppose, directly regulate or play a direct role in that is beyond our scope of our operation.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Just following up, some time ago we advertised the space that was previously occupied by the coffee hole at the Kingborough Hub. I'm just wondering how that, any updates on that, please?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we engaged a commercial real estate agent to handle those expressions of interest. That process has been running now for, it'll be 14 or 15 weeks, and whilst we've had interest, we've yet to receive a formal submission for the space. So we've had a couple that fitted the brief in terms of what council is looking for, and they were particularly interested in the space, but for a number of reasons haven't pursued it. So we're still actively looking and seeking expressions of interest.
Thank you. Any further questions without notice from councillors? No, thank you very much. Questions on notice from councillors. There were four questions on notice from Councillor Cordover with responses from Mr. Mackey. They were in relation to traffic management, footpath on Wells Parade, Leslie Road and Auburn Road. Open session of council now adjourns at 5:46pm and the planning authority commences at 5:46pm. We are on page 5, DA 2025-188, development application for two multiple dwellings, one existing and demolition of outbuilding at 8 Dollery Drive, Kingston, with a recommendation on page 21. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley, the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Yes, as you said, we're considering a development application for multiple units, one that is existing and one that is new. The recommendation is for refusal, which is something that doesn't come to council very often. The three reasons for refusal, just in my layman's terms, are the number of car parking spaces, the layout of the car parking spaces, and the visual elements of the car parking proposed at the front. And I just wanted to tease this out a little bit more if I can, please. When I was reading the report, I was reading the documentation that was actually lodged, so the words that were written by the architect, and they're actually talking about having the visitor car parking on the street, and they've also mentioned that there'll be a 1,200 high front fence. Is that different to what has now been submitted?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. In regards to the question regarding car parking, the proposal is for five parking spaces to be provided on site. However, three of those parking spaces have been proposed to be located to the rear of the site in the vicinity of the new dwelling. And the way that they are designed is effectively jockey parking, which means that they can't be used by visitors to the site because they rely on having to move the vehicles out of the way so someone can get out of the garage. So, for example, the parking space that they have designated as the visitor parking space, although it is notated as being visitors for Unit 2 only, so not a shared common visitor parking space, it is partially in front of the garage to Unit 2, which means that if there's a car parked in Unit 2's garage and a car parked in the visitor parking space, they obviously wouldn't be able to get in and out of the garage. So on that basis, they've effectively applied for a relaxation of the visitor parking space requirements, and part of their justification is to rely on parking on street for the purposes of visitors. So hopefully
okay.
that answers the Deputy Mayor.
Yeah. So because what's written by the architects, it really talks about the visitor parking being on the street, but then in the report it's described as the visitor parking being outside of the garage at the back. So I'm just trying to work out which it is. Because what I'd like to know is if the visitor parking was allowed to be on the street and we could accept that as reasonable, then maybe it would solve some of the other issues with not enough space to turn around and those sorts of things.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. So the application is relying on not providing visitor parking spaces because of the layout of that. So yes, what the architect has said in terms of relying on the street on street parking for visitor parking space is correct, because they are effectively asking for a relaxation. Their plans do notate the parking space in front of the garage to unit 2 as a visitor parking space, but with a notation that it is for visitors to unit 2 only. The performance criteria does allow council to reduce the number of parking spaces, so it is possible that that council could approve the reliance upon on-street parking for visitor parking. In this case, our assessment from the development engineers and the planning officers is that's not appropriate to do so in this case because of the lack of parking available on the street and the demands for car parking in that street. It's a very busy street with not a lot of space available on site. So the assessment by the relevant officers is that it is not appropriate in this case to approve the relaxation and allow the on-street parking to be used for visitor parking.
Because when I drove
Deputy
up...
Mayor.
Sorry. No, it doesn't trigger otherwise.
Okay. When I drove up Dollery Drive, it's quite a wide street and there's plenty of space for on-street parking. So I'm just wondering why it is not considered reasonable that we allow the visitor parking to be on-street in this case.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. So the council officers, the development engineers and the council planning staff have done inspections of the site and have looked at all the available information. The application wasn't supported by a traffic impact assessment and the assessment of the officers was that it isn't suitable to rely on on-street parking in this case.
And can you
Deputy Mayor.
Can you please point to where in the planning scheme it is saying specifically that the visitor parking cannot be on the street?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It doesn't specifically say that in the planning scheme. As I explained, there is a performance criteria, so the acceptable solution sets what is required for parking. The performance criteria for that clause, which if you have a look... excuse me while I just find the relevant bit. In the report on page 11, so it's clause E6.6.1, the performance criteria is listed on the bottom of page 11 and the top of page 12. That allows council to allow for a reduced number of parking spaces having regard to a range of things. One of the things that it is under B is the availability of on-street and public car parking in the locality. So that is something that council can consider.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The Deputy Mayor will wait for me to give her the call. So just we're still having problems with the audio, so it's really important to just wait. We're just having a discussion as to whether we can the live stream because of the audio problems. So if you can please adhere to waiting for the call, which enables our communications person to hit the right buttons and ensure your microphone is on as loud as possible for the stream. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Would you mind repeating again, please, your reasoning for why the visitor parking cannot be on the street, given that it is a wide street and that there is plenty of space there for on-street parking?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The reasons for the parking not being acceptable are spelt out in the planning report. So on page 13, there are a number of dot points that refer to that. The second dot point talks about the existing development in the area significantly limiting the availability of on-street parking, and relying on on-street parking to meet the needs of the proposed development would likely result in parking overspill, placing additional pressure on surrounding streets and reducing overall parking efficiency.
The Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I don't feel very satisfied with that argument. If I can move on to the visual elements of car parking proposed at the front. So I'll just read out what the architect said for this one. Parking for the existing dwelling has been proposed in front of the existing dwellings building line to increase the amenity of the existing and proposed dwellings. Blah, 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 blah. And then it goes on, the proposed parking will be screened with a new 1,200 high front fence and utilises an underutilised area of the property. Discretion is requested for this breach as it is consistent with the existing streetscape and neighbouring parking conditions. So I would like to understand, please, given that a 1,200 high fence would be screening any car parking that's in front of the building, why have we decided that that's not acceptable, please?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. So the planning scheme requires the siting of car parking in certain zones, one of those being the inner residential zone. So this property is zoned inner residential, not general residential like most of our standard residential zones are. That the Clause E6.7.12 requires that the parking be located to the rear of the dwelling, and it does allow, as there is a performance criteria, for council to approve parking located at the front of the building line where there are topographical or other site constraints that dictate that that is the only practical solution. And there are a number of things that also can be taken into consideration in regards to that performance criteria. The main criteria allowing car parking forward of the building line is to ensure that it doesn't visually dominate the site, that it maintains streetscape character and amenity, doesn't result in poor quality of visual or audio amenity for the occupants of immediately adjoining properties, and allows passive surveillance of the street. In this case, the proposal is to have two tandem parking spaces along the front of the boundary. In effect, between the driveway, the turning areas to get into those spaces and the two spaces themselves, almost the entire frontage is occupied by hard stand concrete surface. This is not considered to be a design that doesn't visually dominate the site, because basically all bar, there's no dimension on this plan, but all bar a metre or so at the bottom end of the property is not covered with concrete. Whilst, yes, they are proposing a fence and some landscaping to screen that, the effect of that landscaping and screening makes it difficult to achieve passive surveillance from the street, which is one of the other criteria that is required. So it is a combination. They have tried to use fencing and landscaping to soften the appearance, but because of the significant amount of hard stand required to facilitate those parking spaces and the combination of that screening resulting in a lack of passive surveillance between the dwelling and the street, because there is no other area available for that passive surveillance, that is the basis for our concerns that it doesn't satisfy the performance criteria.
The Deputy Mayor.
Is it not that those windows in that existing building are quite high up, so they would be able to see over a 1,200 high fence and get some passive surveillance?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. I'm not sure of the sill heights of the existing dwelling and the difference in levels of parking area versus the floor levels of the buildings and the windows. If there are higher level windows, it does make visual surveillance from those windows difficult if the sill height is high. But to be honest, I'm not sure what the... I don't know if we've got an existing dwelling elevation. Sorry.
Is it page 11 of the exist? There's a picture there of the existing dwelling, figure 6.
Yeah.
Yes, I can see. Sorry, just let me have a look at that. Certainly, the window that you can see in that shows the seal height at 2.4, it does have a higher seal height, and at that end, potentially, that may provide for some passive surveillance, but obviously we're talking about the entire frontage being occupied by the parking spaces. So normally, where you may have some parking in the front, you often might just have, say, one parking space or some turning manoeuvring area that leaves a significant portion of the frontage free from parking. And so in this case, as I said, the entire frontage basically is occupied by that car parking, which does dominate that streetscape. So it's a combination. It's not necessarily just one thing in isolation. It's a combination of all of those things that lead us to say that it isn't an acceptable outcome.
Thank you. Just before I go back to the Deputy Mayor, we are going to have to cut the live stream because we're getting feedback that it's drifting in and out and people can't hear us adequately. So to those people who are watching along at home on YouTube, I apologise. We will cut the live feed now because the quality of it is so poor. We will make sure that tomorrow that the audio of the meeting is available on our website. So my apologies and good evening to all of you who were trying without much quality of AV to hear us. So we will continue now with the live stream cut, and I'm with the Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Yeah, I must say I'm not satisfied with that answer. In my mind, having a visitor car park that was on the street would allow for more manoeuvrability, and having a 1,200 high fence would solve the visual elements. I would like to now just ask about how a redesign has possibly been communicated with the proponents. It mentions in the report on multiple occasions that a redesign would solve some of the problems as well. Can you please just take me through the process of working with proponents? Having put through a development application myself recently, I know that it can be quite an emotional experience. It can sometimes be quite triggering when you're being told no, and I'd just like to understand how you work through that kind of situation and how you communicate with potential redesigns.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. So in relation to any application that comes before us for assessment, the first thing we do is assess the application against the standard of the planning scheme and determine compliance with the relevant planning standards. We then determine whether or not we need any further information to be able to address those standards, and particularly if there is non-compliance, we will often ask for information to demonstrate compliance with the relevant performance criteria, and we will usually offer any advice in relation to concerns that we may have about compliance. In this particular case, the land is zoned inner residential. The inner residential zone differs from the general residential zone in that whilst it does obviously provide for a higher density of development, to facilitate that development, it provides different standards that encourage higher density development by increasing the building height allowable under the planning scheme, and in effect it's trying to encourage development to look at maximising the use of the building envelope by building higher buildings, in particularly in relation to double storey, to have a smaller footprint but provide for a higher density of development. In this case, we have a three-bedroom dwelling that is proposed. There are ways that that dwelling could be designed that would facilitate a better outcome on the site. So a reduction in the number of bedrooms, therefore reducing footprint, is one option. Another option is a multi-storey temporary development to reduce the footprint and provide more availability on site for parking and manoeuvring. Those suggestions were put to the applicant through both the further information letters and discussions with the applicant. It is my understanding that the applicant chose not to redesign the property, redesign the proposal, and put forward the application as we see it now, and asked council to assess the application as per those submissions.
So when you say you put it to the proponent, how was that?
Deputy Mayor.
Doesn't really matter now, we're not live streaming it, so we'll just try and practice.
In what way was it put to the proponents, please?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. In relation to, obviously I wasn't the assessing officer, so I can't tell you the exact conversations that were had, but my understanding is that through the further information letters, suggestions were made in return in terms of looking at redesigning. It's not council officers' role to design a development for applicants, so we can certainly offer advice in terms of things that could be considered, but it's not up to us to be able to actually design it for them. But we do regularly with our contacts with applicants, particularly where we have concerns that something doesn't comply, that we would provide some suggestions as to things that they could do, and particularly we've had a number of issues of late with this inner residential zoning and trying to encourage applicants to look at maximising the use of the building envelope and designing their developments in accordance with how that zone is intended to work.
So, sorry,
Deputy Mayor.
I missed the answer. Did you put it to them in a letter, or was it a verbal discussion?
Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. I can't be 100% sure on that because I didn't sign any of the further information letters with regard to this, but my understanding is that it would have been done in both further information letters as well as conversations with the applicant.
Deputy Mayor.
Okay. Well, thank you for your answers. I don't feel very satisfied on this one, to be honest. I'm not sure which way I'm going to vote yet, but I'm really looking forward to hearing further discussion and see what other questions other councillors have. Thanks.
Further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Is this close enough?
Yep.
Yep. Where is my question? Sorry. With regards to the... sorry, I've just jumped a bit too far away. Here we go. My question is regarding the Table E61 of the planning scheme. Table E6.1 of the planning scheme. Does it anywhere require that a visitor space be located on common property, or does it only require that a dedicated visitor space be provided?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The planning scheme itself doesn't deal with strata applications as such. So common property is a terminology that relates to an application for a strata plan under the Strata Titles Act. In terms of the Table E6.1, it requires a visitor parking space. Whilst visitor parking space is not defined under the planning scheme, by the way the structure of the scheme works, that you have to have designated parking spaces per unit plus visitor parking space, then that visitor parking space has to be available to visitors of all of the units within the complex. Excuse me a moment. Sorry. And so when it comes to an application for a strata, which may or may not occur, so just because someone does a multiple unit development doesn't mean that they have to strata title the property. It is more common that people generally tend to. But when they do strata title that, for the visitor parking space to serve its intended purpose, which is as a space available to visitors of all units, then it needs to be contained within the common property. Otherwise, it is for the exclusive use of the particular unit within which boundaries it is.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. So you've conceded that the scheme, sorry, you've conceded the table of the planning scheme that's relevant does not require common property. This, you've then talked about it being strata, which is fair enough. This is a tiny strata. The houses are very close. We're not talking about a large strata where obviously parking is required on site. So why have we used the requirement of common property? Why have we... did that cut out? No. Why have we used the requirement of common property as a point of refusal, and then we went to P1 and it still didn't satisfy P1?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. In the application, the applicant has shown on the plans a proposed strata lot boundaries. That's not an uncommon thing to see in unit development applications. In this case, they have shown the common property as ending at the back of the dwelling, which means that the space that they have proposed as a visitor parking space would not be within common property, which therefore means that it would not be available for use of the visitors to both of the dwellings. The notation on the plan also notes that whilst it's calling it a visitor parking space, it does notate that it is for visitors to Unit 2 only. So for that reason, it's not serving the purpose of a visitor parking space because it would not be available to visitors to both units, and therefore the assessment is that it doesn't meet the requirements of Table E6.1 and triggers the discretion under the performance criteria. As I've highlighted previously with the questions from Councillor Gladewright, our assessment is that it doesn't meet the performance criteria because there is insufficient parking provided and the use of the street for on-street visitor parking is not acceptable in this case.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. So if we condition the approval to line mark a sign and sign one bay as visitor and require it to remain available to visitors of either dwelling, would that satisfy the acceptable solution of A1?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it would if there was a space available. Now, because of the design of the development, the parking space that they've designated as a visitor parking space wouldn't be able to meet those requirements, as I explained earlier, because it's parked in front of the garage to Unit 2. It's possible that the other parking space on the site, which is identified, I think, as P3 from memory, just put my glasses on so I can read, P3. So that is, it's possible that that parking space may be able to meet the requirements for visitor parking. Certainly P5 wouldn't be able to. P3 it's a little bit tricky because of the manoeuvring and getting in and out of there, but it is possible that they may be able to design the common property and the manoeuvring to facilitate visitor parking in that parking space, but we don't have the information available to confirm 100% for that, but it is possible.
Thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. When assessing against performance criteria P1, did the officer report consider factor C? So P1 has a few conditions. Factor C is called the availability and frequency of public transport within 400 metres walking distance.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's addressed under the third dot point on page 13, where the use of transport, alternative transport modes in Kingston's currently low, with the area being highly car dependent. ABS census data indicates that 94% of households own at least one vehicle and 56% have access to two or more. That's information from our car parking strategy. And given that a revised design could reasonably accommodate the required car parking site to meet the planning scheme requirements, and also the fact that it is a three-bedroom house, so it's more likely that two vehicles would be required for a three-bedroom house.
And so Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. And did you say that you there would be a solution to that?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor, a solution to the provision of a visitor parking space?
Yes.
There is the potential that that may be able to be done with a redesign, yes. Certainly with a redesign of the dwelling, then there shouldn't be any reason why they couldn't achieve the required parking on site.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. So we've got from yourself two potential acceptable solutions on parking. Were these communicated as options to the developer?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. My understanding is, yes, there were a number of conversations with the developer around redesigning the development to comply.
And Councillor Antolli.
And were they refused by the developer? What was the position taken?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The position taken was that they did not amend their application, and the application that we have before us is what they asked us to assess.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. Did the officer report present any evidence that nearby curbside parking spaces on Dollery Drive are already saturated, or was it an assumption?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. My understanding is that the council officers visited the site. The development engineers and the planning officers did their assessment based on their professional knowledge and understanding of parking within that area, and based on their understanding of and their knowledge and experience of the demand for parking for these types of developments.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. Was that evidence or that opinion provided in the report?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it is provided in the assessment against the performance criteria.
Okay.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. So is that evidence-based weighting of on-street availability clearly articulated as evidence or assumption?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. There was not a formal traffic impact assessment submitted by the applicant, so there was no evidence provided from the applicant to support the use of the on-site on-street parking. The council officers undertook their own investigation and assessment of the application and used their experience of these types of applications to determine their professional opinion, which is what has been expressed in the report.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. Why would we use assumption and professional opinion to deny to make a fact that the street is saturated when myself and Councillor Gladewright, I think maybe others, have actually physically been to this street multiple times and there is plenty of on-site parking, Saturdays, Friday afternoons, Saturday morning.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The assessment was done by the officers based on their knowledge and understanding and their experience in the same way that an assessment would be done by a traffic engineer. There was, as I said, the developer did not provide a traffic impact assessment to support their application. Mm-hmm. Our officers undertook their own assessments, as we do with every application for planning approval and assessment under a performance criteria. The performance criteria has a number of things that council officers must have regard to. They make an assessment of those matters and they perform a professional opinion using their experience. It's no different with this performance criteria than it is with any other performance criteria under the planning scheme.
Councillor Antolli.
Is the fact not that P1 requires evidence-based weighting when making these decisions?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The performance criteria requires council to be satisfied that the number of on-site parking spaces provided is sufficient to meet the reasonable needs of the users. It does say that council has to have regard to, but it is only having regard to. There is not a strict compliance requirement for compliance with every single one of those criteria. It is just in there the assessment of determining whether the number of on-site parking spaces provided is sufficient to meet the reasonable needs of the users is met, having regard to those matters, which is what was done in this case.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Mayor. My understanding is that P1 judgment is weakened because it requires evidence-based weighting of on-street availability. Am I wrong?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. As I've explained, the performance criteria requires council to have regard to the availability of on-street and public car parking in the locality. There is no requirement that there has to be evidence-based assessment, as you're saying. I mean, that is part of the assessment that we do, is we take a whole range of things into consideration. And in this case, the council officer's professional assessment is that it isn't appropriate in this case.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Ntoli.
As one who's been up and down the street, my professional opinion is that it's plentiful. You mentioned earlier that there is a problem with... I can hear the sound cutting out of the speaker above our head when I talk. Is that... Yeah, others
That's
are...
That's all right, yeah.
I'll press on. Councillor Glade, when you were discussing parking on the street with Councillor Glade, right, you mentioned that screening is important. I've noticed that there's quite a number of homes on that street that have likewise parking on the property right in front of the main house with no screening at all. So how does that work when we require this of this particular property?
Mrs. Stevenson, sorry.
Through you, Mayor. Dollery Drive is an older established residential area. I don't know off the top of my head exactly when those houses were built, but a number of those houses have been there for a long time and were no doubt approved and built under previous planning schemes, which probably wouldn't have had those same standards that we have in the current planning scheme. So in the current planning scheme, which is the scheme under which we're assessing this application, there are very specific requirements regarding the location of parking in the inner residential zone, and there are specific requirements under the performance criteria in regards to screening and softening the appearance of that parking. So the reason why this application is being required to undertake or to consider those mechanisms to screen the parking is because the planning scheme requires it.
Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you for that. I'd like to turn my attention to the layout of parking areas, which is discussed under clause E6.7.5.
Give us a page number for easy reference, please.
Oh, God,
Sorry, I've got it.
Yeah, page 13.
What page
13.
Would that be?
13. Sorry, it starts on bottom of page 13.
Thank
and
you.
Yep. Continues on page 14.
Thank you. Thanks for assisting. That's good. Does E6.7.4, the A1 performance criteria, does it require forward exit for this application? Is it mandatory?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The requirement, the standard, so it's clause E6.7.5, requires compliance with the Australian standard.
Mm-hmm.
The Australian standard sets out a number of requirements, including manoeuvring and exiting the property in a forward direction. So it does require that the parking spaces must be able to be exited. And in this case, because of the restricted area available, there's a requirement for certain area at the rear of a parking space to enable the manoeuvring to get in and out of the parking spaces, which is set under the Australian standard, and these parking spaces don't achieve that in this case. That, together with the length of the driveway and the narrowness of the manoeuvring area, means that there would have to be reversing from the site, and that reversing with all of those factors taken into consideration wouldn't result in a safe, compliant access under the Australian standard.
Thank you.
Councillor Ntoli.
So what evidence did Council's development engineer rely on to conclude that this layout is unsafe?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. So they relied on their an assessment against the standards that are set out in the Australian standard.
Councillor Ntoli, sorry.
I'm waiting for you.
This is really exhausting. Councillor Ntoli.
So would a traffic engineer's compliance certificate under the standards resolve the concerns about aisle widths and manoeuvring?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. I'm not sure I quite understand the question, sorry.
Councillor Ntoli.
Would a traffic engineer's compliance certificate under ASNZS 2890.1, which is the standard, section 2, resolve the concerns about aisle widths and manoeuvring?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Certainly, if we were to receive something from a traffic engineer, then we would assess that, like we do with all information provided by people to address the planning scheme. We would do our own assessment of that and be satisfied, need to be satisfied that it did meet the requirements and meet the Australian standard, but certainly we would review one if we were to receive one, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Antolli.
If we can move to parking in front of the building, I've touched on that already earlier. Under P1, is front setback parking outright prohibited, or can it be approved where it does not visually dominate and maintains streetscape character?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, as it is a performance criteria, it does allow council to approve. It's not an outright prohibition, but council needs to be satisfied that the performance criteria has been met. And that does include that it has to be, that council can approve it only if it's designed and located to satisfy those things, which includes visual domination, streetscape character, passive surveillance, and so forth.
And did the
Councillor Antolli.
And did the did the developer offer screening as a acceptable solution?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. The screening wasn't proposed as an acceptable solution because the parking is still forward of the building line, so it doesn't meet the acceptable solution, but they proposed that as a way of demonstrating compliance with the performance criteria.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you. So I mentioned before that quite a number of properties on the street are not screened and that they have parking on fresh new parking concrete right in front of their home. Did the officer report take into account the examples of $1, $2, $6 and $39 Drive where front parking has been approved under the current or previous scheme?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. In relation to the performance criteria, the performance criteria requires council to be satisfied and to only approve parking spaces located in front of the building area where topographical and other site constraints dictate that this is the only practical solution because of one of those reasons, and only if designed in that way. So parking, examples of parking on other sites isn't necessarily a factor that the performance criteria requires or allows council to take into consideration. Each application must be considered on its own merits and must be considered in relation to the things that are spelt out in the performance criteria, and that doesn't necessarily include, in fact it doesn't include, consideration of whether there are other examples of that type of development.
Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Mayor. I think we touched on this earlier, so officers didn't request a formal parking demand assessment as the code allows when relying on P1, is that correct?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Sorry, have we gone back to the number of car parking spaces clause?
Yeah.
Sorry, just let me...
Amongst the EIOIs that you sent backwards and forwards, did you request a formal parking demand assessment to back up the assumption that there was not enough parking based on the opinion of officers?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. I don't know for certain. I don't have copies of the further information requests in front of me. Given that a traffic impact assessment was not submitted and is not referenced in the report, then I assume that either we didn't request one or that the applicant chose not to provide one to support their application.
Okay.
Councillor Antolli.
My final question for now is, since there were no public objections during the advertising, did the officer report give weight to the absence of community concern about parking or streetscape?
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Whilst obviously council is required to take into consideration any representations that may be received, the absence of representations doesn't automatically mean that an application meets a performance criteria. So whilst obviously if there had have been representations received raising those concerns, that would have contributed to our assessment, but the absence of them does not mean that it automatically meets the performance criteria. An assessment was therefore done accordingly in the report.
Councillor Antali.
So does that mean that council officers did or did not take that into account?
Mrs Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It was taken into account to the degree that there were no representations received and that therefore there was no issue raised with car parking.
Thank you.
Councillor Antali.
Thank you for clarifying that. It's important for councillors to know that, because if we decide as a council to find acceptable solutions for this to go ahead, we want to make sure that it stands a good chance of not being brought down at appeal, and given that there were no objections from the community at all, as is, it's something that we as councillors need to be aware of. That's my questions for now, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Antali. Councillor Bain and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions. Just to clarify around the suggestions that were put to the applicant, can I just confirm, was the two suggestions to reduce the proposed dwelling to a two-bedroom or go multi-storey, or was there a suggestion that the existing footprint could just be moved?
Mrs Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Again, I wasn't involved in the direct conversations with the applicant, but my understanding is that the discussions were around a redesign of the development. It is possible that that could take many forms. Whether or not the specifics were talked through, as I said, it's not our role to design the development for the developers, but certainly in terms of the potential, yes, reducing the footprint, whether that be by reducing the number of bedrooms or by going up a level, would certainly assist with that. Potentially also relocating the building. It does have a generous setback to the rear, which is a positive. So obviously looking at sort of reducing the footprint or going up would result in a better outcome with better amenity for the residents, as well as better parking and manoeuvring available on site.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you. Next question. If the P5 park was removed and the visitor parking was changed to on street, would that improve the manoeuvring for the two remaining car parks for the proposed rear dwelling?
Mrs Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It doesn't make a significant difference, largely because the P3 parking space and the P4 parking space will still have to reverse all the way to the street, because there isn't, if there's a car parked in the P3 parking space, then cars manoeuvring out of the garage, the P4 space, would not be able to manoeuvre and turn on site. And similarly for the P3, there is insufficient manoeuvring area for the turning circles for a car parked in the P3 space to be able to turn and exit the property in a forward direction. So removing the P5 space doesn't really change the, and the, everything else staying as is, doesn't change the ability for cars from those other two parking spaces to be able to manoeuvre on site.
Councillor Bain.
Sorry, so just to clarify, if P5 was removed, the P3 wouldn't be able to reverse back towards the garage and then go out front ways? Or vice versa?
Mr Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Without having the turning circles in front of me, I can't be 100% sure, but certainly looking at it and based on my experience and understanding of the requirements for manoeuvring, that no, it wouldn't be possible to get the appropriate turning circles. My understanding is that you need to have a minimum of 6 metres clear of the end of the parking space to be able to manoeuvre back to then be able to turn. And as you can see with the P3 space, if you were to manoeuvre backwards, you're going to, even if you can get the 6 metres, which I'm not sure you could, you're not going to be able to turn because the existing dwelling is in the way. So you won't get, there's not, it's too tight to turn the vehicle to manoeuvre back out. You possibly may be able to do it in sort of, you know, 10, 18 point turns, I'm not sure, but certainly not in the 3-point turn that is required under the Australian standard.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to move on to one of the other assessments, just want to put on the record that I agree with Councillor Brad Wright and Councillor Antoli that I disagree with the assessment against P1 on page 13. My observations is, you know, the report says the existing development in the area significantly limits the availability of on-street parking. My observations is there is enough parking there for one, if not two, visitor parks. We're not talking visitor parking being there all the time. It's just when there's visitors, so I don't think it would be an issue for the area. And then the other one that's raised is the use of alternative transport modes in Kingston's currently low. Like, I guess my observation is this would be an assessment on the whole of Kingston and Kingbra, and we're talking about inner residential here where we're trying to encourage people to use nearby public transport, walk to services. So I think if you surveyed inner residential, you might get different results as well, and that's what we're trying to encourage. So I think we should be encouraging these type of developments. Just moving on to the landscaping, just to improve passive surveillance and streetscape character, can conditions be placed for any fence to be like partially transparent and any planting to be similar so you've still got that passive surveillance that can be seen through the front?
Mrs Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, certainly. It's standard practice with applications that we would require a detailed landscaping plan, and so certainly you could include a condition that would require a landscaping plan and require particular outcomes to be achieved. The balance in this case is obviously balancing the need for passive surveillance versus the need for screening of the parking, particularly because the parking spaces dominate that whole front streetscape, as I explained earlier. You know, you've got 90% of the front of the site is concrete, and there is limited availability for meaningful landscaping, and so balancing the two becomes a little bit tricky, but certainly, you know, a condition could be written to attempt to provide a detailed landscaping plan that tries to provide for both.
Councillor Bang.
Thank you, Mayor. I think I'll just sum up by saying, based on what I've heard, discussed so far, and based on my observations, I just foreshadow that I'll put forward an alternative recommendation if the proposed isn't supported.
Thank you. Councillor Street, I heard you next.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll keep this as concise as I can, given the subject material. I agree with much of what's already been said by my colleagues. I don't agree with the recommendation, and I intend to outline the reasons why I don't agree with the recommendation. Just before I do that, one of my bugbears with respect to the way that we speak about the planning scheme, and I've said it before, and with greatest respect to the applicant, they are somewhat guilty of this as well in terms of discussing relaxations and requesting discretions. There is a tendency to suggest that a resort to the performance criteria is necessarily a negative thing or is something less than the acceptable solution. The reality is actually quite different in that the acceptable solution and the performance criteria are just two pathways to compliance under the scheme. And that's not me saying that. That's the tribunal who have said that, that's the case. There's not that one is more virtuous or better than the other. They are simply two avenues of compliance through the scheme. So the fact that we're assessing performance criteria here is really neither a negative nor a positive. It's just a reality. The pathway for acceptable solution wasn't met, and so we're assessing the performance criteria. With that in mind, I don't agree that the proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with a 6.61. As I've said previously, I agree with much of what has been said about this already. I don't accept that the demand or the increase in demand for car parking that results from a one-unit infill development is such that the parking in the surrounding area will be affected and not be able to cope to the extent that's been suggested. With greatest respect to our staff, that evidence is anecdotal, and my own anecdotal evidence is that there is availability of on-street car parking in that particular locality sufficient to meet the needs of this development and the surrounding uses. Again, respectfully, there has been a conflation of the presence of public transport within 400 metres of the area and whether or not the public transport itself is likely to be used. What performance criteria a 6.61C actually says is that you need to have regard to the availability and frequency of public transport within a 400 metre walking distance of the site. Well, that exists. There is a bus stop within 400 metres of the site. Public transport is available. Tick. D then says the availability and likely use of other modes of transport. Well, it's clearly not talking about public transport because that's not an other mode of... That's not something other than public transport which is referred to in the preceding column. So what are we talking about? Well, I suppose we're talking about active transport. We're talking about potentially, I don't know, e-bikes, availability of cycling infrastructure and those sorts of things. I think there's been a conflation there of the likelihood of use of public transport and its availability. It's clearly available, so it meets the performance criteria. The availability and likely use of other modes of transport, well, I suppose there isn't much, but there also isn't much in the rest of Kingborough. Yes, there is cycling infrastructure on Channel Highway, so yes, there is availability of another mode of transport there in terms of separated cycling lanes. Is it likely to be used? I'm not sure that it actually matters that much in the scheme of things because I don't accept that the additional pressure is going to be that great. One of the other problems with assessing against the parking and access code is that it's for all uses as well. And so you end up getting into F, which is any reduction in car parking demand due to the sharing of car parking spaces by multiple uses and the like, which isn't really relevant here. Deficient parking deficiency or surplus associated with the existing use of the land, which also isn't particularly relevant. I did miss one. The availability and suitability of alternative arrangements for car parking provision is actually a point in favour of this development. The report states that there isn't any other suitable alternative arrangement for car parking provision. I count that as being supportive of that performance criteria rather than against it. The remainder of those provisions, not any that are particularly relevant to this application. We have regard to them to the extent that they are, but I don't believe that they are particularly relevant. I don't agree that the proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with 6.7.5. I have a little bit of an issue with the reasoning here in that it seems to be being suggested the acceptable solution in 6.7.5 requires assessment against the Australian standard. If you comply with the Australian standard, you comply with the acceptable solution, pathway one. Pathway two is the performance criteria, which is that the layout of car parking spaces, access aisles, circulation, roadways and ramps must be safe and must ensure ease of access, egress and manoeuvring on site. My difficulty here is that it seems that the position is that in order to comply with the performance criteria, you then need to resort back to the acceptable solution, which is the Australian standard. Well, that cannot be the case, because if that were the case, then the only way to comply with the performance criteria would be to comply with the acceptable solution. What's actually called for is an assessment in line with the performance criteria. And I don't accept, again, in the context of a one-unit infill development, that the design of the parking as it stands is unsafe. for a one dwelling infill development such as this, the suggestion that you might have to reverse down the driveway, as many other houses in that area would be required to do with single driveways. I do not find that to be unsafe in the context of this particular application. With respect to 6.7.12...
Oh, you've run out of time. Would you like some additional time, Councillor Street?
I have some additional time.
You can have up to 3 minutes.
I try to avoid doing this.
I can't remember you ever having done it, actually. So I'd be more than happy for someone to move.
3 minutes,
please. You could only have 3 minutes. That's all the Act allows you. Moved Councillor Antolli, seconded Councillor Glade-Wright. All of those in favour? Against, motion is carried.
And
three
I said
more
I was
minutes.
Going to be concise too.
You did. You're not succeeding. But you're very interesting, so keep going.
I'm really. I don't find myself interesting at all. I don't agree that the proposal fails to demonstrate compliance with 6.7.12. We get to the point of assessing against the performance criteria because E is met, P1E. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and try and tell you that that's not slightly contrived because I don't think that that was the intention of P1E, that because you're 2.5 metres from a habitable room and you're trying to infill develop behind your house, you all of a sudden get across the line to consider the rest of the performance criteria. I don't think that was the intention, but it is what it says, and so I think that's the end of the story. You therefore end up saying that you get to the front of the streetscape only if the front of the dwelling for your parking only if designed and located to satisfy all of the following. I don't accept that it does visually dominate the site with the proposed landscaping and fencing that is on the plans and the context of the surrounding dwellings. Which also leads on to two, maintain streetscape character and amenity. I take that to mean the whole of the streetscape, not just that with respect to the lot in question. And that gets you to look at the surrounding area. The streetscape character is several dwellings in the immediate vicinity that all have front of dwelling parking. And respectfully, many of which don't have the same features that are proposed for this application. It's not suggested, as far as I can tell, that the application results in a poor quality of visual or audio amenity for the occupants of immediately adjoining properties, and in any event, I don't accept that it does. And I don't accept that it'll be designed such that it won't allow passive surveillance of the street, given the sill height of the windows from floor level. And natural ground level, the occupants of the front dwelling will be able to see over vehicles and the 1.2 metre front fence to provide passive surveillance. For all of those reasons, I think the application does meet the performance criteria that the report says that it contravenes, and I'll be voting against the recommendation and voting for Councillor Bain's foreshadowed motion if we get to that point.
Thank you. Before I call on for the speakers, I will just point out that we do have that foreshadowed motion. So the process, just so we're clear moving forward now, is that when there are no further contributions or questions, we will need to vote on the existing recommendation. If that is then not supported, we would then table Councillor Bain's alternative recommendation, which I believe includes permit conditions, and vote on that. So are there any further contributions, questions? Councillor Fox and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I find this process extremely intimidating. I have been on council now for nearly 38 years. I have never felt more out of my depth, because I feel as councillors we're acting as politicians and not as professional engineering staff or professional planners. We have a report before us from professionally qualified and experienced planners and engineers. The process here is that we have no public appeal to this decision, no input from the community. However, the process is that if we refuse this development, as is proposed by our own professional staff, the developer has the opportunity to appeal that decision. And in that case, all the arguments that have been now put forward by our non-professional counsellors can be either agreed or upheld or refused by the tribunal. The developer also has an opportunity and has had an opportunity to revise their application based on professional advice, and they have proposed to go down this path. And for that reason, I feel that we as a council should stand by our staff and by the professional decision and recommendation from our staff, which is highly detailed, highly complex and very precise. And in my opinion, we should not be arguing that. So I would strongly recommend that we support the current motion before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Next, I had Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This has been a really interesting one and a difficult one, very difficult one. I too have visited the site, driven up and down the street, and I've spent a lot of time kind of door knocking in that area and letterboxing, so I know it very well. And I think I'll just start my contribution by expressing how rare it is that planning officers do recommend something for a refusal. And so, in fact, at the beginning of this month, I asked how many development applications do get refused by this council, and per year it's never more than one or two, and that's been the case since 2018. So it is very rare that we find ourselves in this position. Counting the numbers around the table, it looks to me like this has a very good chance of going to the foreshadowed motion, that is to say that it's looking at this stage like there's a pretty significant chance that the councillors acting as the planning authority may well overturn a recommendation for refusal by expert planning officers. But I did want to really clarify what we mean when we do talk about a professional opinion. So sitting around this council table, we all come from a very diverse range of backgrounds and experiences and professional capacities, which is really important and very good, and that's how we represent the community best. But there is a difference between our opinion and that of a professional planner, and so I just wanted to be very clear that we're probably not... it's probably not right to say, well, in my professional opinion, I've got a degree in acting from the National Institute of Dramatic Art, and I could give you my professional opinion about acting, but it wouldn't be about planning. What's relevant here is obvious. It's regarding E6.6.1, P1, as we've all discussed. I just wanted to take us through... There's many areas of the planning scheme where this does comply, and I can kind of run through those, but I think we kind of all agree on those. I just wanted to be really clear that what we're assessing this against is KIPS 2015. It's the planning scheme that's currently in place. So even though there might be other dwellings on that street that were approved under the Kingborough Planning Scheme 2000 or before that, or some of the ones that were built in 1963 before there were any planning schemes that were applicable, we have to assess this against the performance criteria and the acceptable solutions of the planning scheme that's in force right now. So I wanted to be very clear about that. And I do want to reiterate, or I guess echo, Councillor Street when he talked about this being a performance-based planning scheme. So it's not that one system is one pathway is better or worse. It's just that there are different ways to get approval, and a performance... We're looking at whether or not this does comply with the performance criteria. Having said all that, there was a thread throughout the debate so far has been, is it just an anecdote about whether or not this will be either a safety risk or whether it will be whether the parking or visitor parking on the street is sufficient or not? It really is the onus of proof belongs to the proponent to be able to provide a traffic impact assessment, or the onus of proof is really not on the council to provide that evidentiary support base. And the reason for that is, well, you can well imagine that, you know, there's a shopping centre going into Kingborough right now, and if they say, well, we think there's enough parking, you prove us wrong, the council would go broke trying to get professional opinions all over the place to try and, you know, if we had to pay for proponents, traffic impact assessments and bushfire assessments and scenic impact assessments, the council would go broke paying for other people's expert planning. So I think this development would really have benefited from a traffic impact assessment that could definitively say, in the opinion of an expert, what the impact on that street will be. Now, anecdotally, I can tell you I've been on that street at the time. There are a few cars parked there, but also there was some roadworks going on, so there were cars, you know, parked up and down on the curb and things like that as well. I just don't think that we... That's why you have traffic impact assessments, is to actually get some clarity over those things. So I think we're in a bit of the... we're still in the dark with respect to what actually the impact will be. What I do know is that we need to be planning for... The urban built environment needs to not just be... Well, it needs to comply, and that's why we have the planning scheme in the first place. So, I can tell you an anecdote about, living in a share house for 7 years, and we all had cars, and as a result, we've heard a little bit tonight about, are we trying to encourage people to use public transport? And I thought Councillor Street's point that it's really not about whether they use it or not, it's about whether it's available within 400 metres. And I do take that point, but I just really wanted to be clear that simply by a proponent not providing adequate car parking... three more minutes, please.
The motion is that Councillor Cordova be given three more minutes. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just because a proponent doesn't offer adequate parking does not encourage people to use public transport. It just encourages people with cars to overspill onto the public domain. So that's another area I wanted to be clear about, is just because a proponent doesn't provide adequate parking does not mean that miraculously more people choose to uptake public transport or active transport. It just means that the cost of the parking gets foisted onto ratepayers rather than being foisted on the proponent who wanted the development in the first place. We need to be encouraging infill. We need to be encouraging higher density in the inner residential areas. It's obvious that this area is close to shops, close to medical, close to schools. It's a good location for higher density, and therefore this type of development is to be encouraged, and I think it is to be encouraged particularly because it will be improving the housing stock that's available. That will help ameliorate our housing crisis. It will create more housing diversity. So that, in a broad sense, is good. But that doesn't mean that we should be flagrant with what the performance criteria are. And I also think it doesn't mean that we should just accept substandard levels of parking simply because we want to address some of those issues around the housing crisis and around more housing diversity and improvements to the housing stock. For various reasons, I think that there are many good aspects about this development, but on this occasion, I will be supporting the recommendation by our planning officers. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Ntoli with a question?
No, a contribution. Thank you, Mayor.
Yep.
Thank you. So I really appreciate everyone's input. I appreciate Councillor Street's salient listing around the fact that it's a dual pathway to the finish line. It's either the acceptable solution or the performance criteria. A lot of the issues that he brought up in the performance criteria, satisfying the performance criteria, was touched on by myself and others. I definitely feel qualified to make a decision as a member of the planning authority, yes or no, because the local government act says I can. And as a local government elected councillor, it's my job to do so. And I won't shirk that job. And I won't hand it over to anybody. I won't hand it over to a staff member. I won't hand it over to an unelected person. I'm going to do it myself. And I'm able to read, and I can read A1 and performance criteria P1 and P2, just like our legal expert on council did. It's not that hard, and I'm able to do that without too much concern. It is a rare issue for us to be brought a refusal, which is part of the reason why we've been over this with a fine, with a magnifying glass, which this is the longest we've cogitated over a motion, I think, a planning authority motion in a long time. And I think it's because it's so unusual. I'm personally gobsmacked that we would refuse increasing housing over parking, that it seems to be eminently solvable. So I'm actually of the opinion, persuaded by colleagues, that I will be voting against the recommendation of council planning officers. I believe that it entirely is supported by the acceptable solution, performance criteria as listed. I personally don't think there's any need to go to an alternative, and I don't see it being taken to the tribunal by any member of the public either.
Thank you, Councillor Entirely. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. I'll try and get this a bit closer. I don't want to make a long contribution because there's already been a lot said and a lot of questions have already been put, but I actually just want to commend the officer, Mrs. Stevenson, who's sat here for a long time and defended a lot of questions very well in defence of what I think is ultimately probably unreasonable recommendation. I will be going with what seems to be the consensus here, that in large, there's enough interpretation for this to be able to be approved, and I don't think it will be such an intensification of use in a residential zone that, in terms of the car parking, is really, as has been pointed out, deserves a refusal. So I'm going to keep it short and sweet, and if there is a debate on the certain conditions, I might talk again. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Gladrott, did you want to close the debate?
Am I allowed to speak? Yes.
Yes.
I'm nervous now. No, I just want to
say... Just good training for when the new system does kick in. You're all doing very well. Councillor Gladrott.
No, I just want to thank everyone, and I'm always so impressed with everyone's eloquence. I wish I was more like you. But, I think this is a good thing for Kingborough. This development is a really good thing. We have a developer here who has taken on board a property which isn't so great, let's face it. He's renovated it, going to make it more livable, introducing more units. It's the right zoning. We should be really helping developers get their projects across the line. And sometimes it is, you know, when it comes down to these things that are, I know Councillor Street doesn't like me saying this, but when things do get a little grey, where it could go this way or it could go that way, I think it's really important that we do try and have a lens of how can we help you get this across the line. And I just would hope that that's what we are always endeavouring to do.
Thank you very much, Councillor Gladrott. So I'm going to put the recommendation. So just to be clear, what we're dealing with at the moment is the recommendation as printed in the agenda. So it is a recommendation for refusal of the application. So all those in favour, say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Yes.
Okay. A show of hands is required. All those in favour of the recommendation for refusal is Councillors Fox and Cordova, and those against is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street, Gladwright and Reet. So the motion is lost. Councillor Bain, you had foreshadowed an alternative motion. Have you given that to Mrs. Morton? Do you have it? Councillor Bain.
I believe the acting CEO and planning staff have it.
Oh, it is. Oh, look at that. It's miraculous. Okay, so we have an alternative motion. This is one that has been prepared by the planning staff. It includes the permit conditions that would be part of any approval that we would otherwise endorse, so we might just leave that on the screen for everyone to just have a quick read through, and you'll just have to slowly scroll up, Mrs. Morton, please. So just for the information of people, when the audio recording goes up on the website, we're still here, we're just reading through. I'm glad I didn't undertake to read it all out, because then it must be very strange for when they're going to be listening to this, that we are still here. The end of it. Thank you. Are there any questions on any of those provisions?
Me.
I had Councillor Bain, then I've got Councillor Antoli, then I've got Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain. No, you were on. You've just turned yourself off.
Sorry. Thank you, Mayor. Can we just go back? I thought it said in there that one visitor parking must be provided.
Down.
Yes, yes. Can I ask?
Mrs. Stevenson, yeah. Sorry. Took me a while to get that message.
Through you, Mayor. I just think it might save a bit of time if I speak to it. So the way the conditions are written at the moment was based, and if you scroll back up to the condition one, is to require the same number of parking spaces that they have currently proposed, which is the 5, but to swap the visitor parking from parking space 5, as currently notated on the plans, to parking space 3. That would result in the required number of parking spaces being provided, and the conditions reflect that in terms of talking about parking space 3 as a visitor parking space to be contained within common property. So the options before council would be to do that or to accept the application as it has been submitted, which is in effect to not provide visitor parking within the common property but to rely on on-street parking. So it's really up to the councillors as to what they wish to do. If you are happy with the proposal as it is and you don't wish the parking space to be contained within common property, then that condition would need to be amended. And there's a couple of other changes in the other conditions that would need to be amended to reflect that as well. The rest of the conditions, I might as well just talk you through them all while I'm here, are pretty much standard conditions. We have this condition number 2 is the landscaping plan condition, which I referred to earlier. That does have some specific things in it because of the nature of the zoning and the parking forward of the building line, so it has some specific requirements regarding how that is to be treated, which is standard conditions that we have been using for other inner residential developments with parking forward of the building line. So that's what condition 2 requires. Condition 3 is also, in this case, there's not a lot of land left that's not already hard stand, but it's just ensuring that any bits that aren't required for parking and access are actually left unhard. That's not really a word, is it? soft, at thank this, you. Yes.
At this point of the meeting, it is.
So that's just the standard requirement there. The next condition is just our standard engineering drawing condition, which is standard for all unit developments. The one thing that may need to be changed with that one is just in relation to the visitor parking, depending on what you want to do as far as the visitor parking space is concerned. Otherwise, that's standard. Start of works condition, which is standard, to require that you have your engineering drawings and your landscaping plan in place before you, and that's all signed off and endorsed by council. construction to be in accordance with the approved plans, which is pretty standard. Again, that one would need to be amended in regard to the visitor car parking sign part under Clause A if you don't include that. Conditions 7, 8 and 9 are standard conditions regarding just the treatment during construction, so you're dealing with your erosion, stormwater and weed management. And 10 is also in regards to standard conditions for multiple dwelling developments for controlling waste during construction. Conditions 11 and 12 are requiring things to be done prior to the occupation of the dwelling, so it's ensuring that all your landscaping is in place, the parking areas and signage have been done, and your letterboxes installed and things like that, which is all standard for multiple dwellings. Condition 13, again, will be reliant upon what you want to do with the visitor parking, but that would need to be deleted if the intention is to not require a visitor parking space within common property. And then condition 14 is the standard TAS water conditions, which they've provided to council, which must be included in the permit.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Am I able to amend my own proposal?
I'm totally in your hands. What would you like to do?
Yeah, my preference would be to remove the visitor parking from the property itself and just have the four dedicated spaces on the property and then the off-street parking be the visitor parking.
Okay. Okay, so Mrs. Stevenson would require some direction from you as to how to amend the clauses there in order to accommodate that.
Okay, through you, Mayor. So just so I can clarify for Councillor Bain, are you proposing that they would only provide the four parking spaces and remove parking space P5, which is the one currently shown as visitor for Unity?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so in that case, condition 1A should be to modified to delete parking space P5.
So it should read to delete parking space 5.
Yeah. Sorry, not to delete those words. Sorry.
I was wondering why you were doing
that
for a minute.
Yeah, so delete the whole of the words that are there and replace it with delete parking space P5.
Before we move on to the others, can I just discuss the proposed fencing along the frontage?
Yep.
Because that to me seemed to be a good suggestion, and the window heights would suggest that passive surveillance can still take place because of the height of the windows. So I'm wondering whether 1B is necessary. Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Again, that's up to the councillors. It was a recommendation of the planners in relation to the issue for passive surveillance that if you're going to allow the parking in front, that may be required to remove the fencing to provide that transparency. But if the councillors are satisfied that the performance criteria is met, then it's up to you whether you want to include that or not.
I would have thought, like, for the security of the cars that are parked there, you're better off to have a fence at the front to shield the cars from the thing, and you're still getting the passive surveillance. So I would like to suggest, and I can see lots of nods, that we remove B. Can I just get a sort of a bit of a nods or shake of the head?
Bain's motion, if he wants to remove it.
Sorry?
It's Bain's statement.
Oh, yes, Councillor Bain. How do you feel about that as the mover of the motion?
The only thing I'd say for discussion is I do like the idea of the transparent fences where you've got the fence there, but you can see through little bits. You can see the shrubs behind there rather than just a fully fence where it blocks out everything. It's a bit more inviting if you can see a little bit of what's going on.
There is a bit of terminology for that about the transparency of the top 30 centimetres or something. We've had that before in some. Mrs. Stevenson, can you help us with that?
Yes, through you, Mayor. It is possible to require a level of transparency. So according to the plans at the moment, it just talks about a 1,200 high front boundary fence. It doesn't, as far as I'm aware, have any detail of that. So you could amend that condition to require 1200 high with a level of transparency. So the transparency would be 25% probably, or would be the most appropriate in that case. So you're allowing for a bit of both in terms of screening and transparency. So you could amend that to require the plans to show the proposed fencing maximum 1.2. Sorry, probably not the word require because we've got at the top, but modified to
provide 25%
fencing along the frontage. Maximum 1.2 metres high with minimum 25% transparency.
Councillor Bain is the mover. Are you happy with that amendment?
I'm happy with that amendment. I'm interested to hear what other people have got to say.
Not encouraging a long debate on this.
Sorry.
Quick point of order, Mayor.
Yes.
I feel bad doing this. So the point of order is under 27... C, which is the councillor is of the opinion that a meeting procedure is contrary to the Act or these regulations. Correct me if I'm wrong, but 21, number 1 of the meeting procedures regulation says, at a meeting, a councillor who did not move or second a motion, the original motion, may move a motion to amend the original motion. So I'm just seeking clarity on when Councillor Bain moved this motion and then amended it. I believe that's in contravention of the meeting procedures regulations, is it not? Like, a mover of a motion cannot amend a motion according to 21.1.
And we've all looked towards our governance expert, Mr. Spee.
Through you, Mayor, there's been no formal amendment to the motion. What is being discussed is the wording of the motion. There hasn't been a formal amendment put forward.
It hasn't yet been moved by Councillor Bain. Perfect. Or by anyone.
No.
So we're just discussing it.
Yes. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, right, we've got that. Where are we going with this? Who's got something to say? Councillor Gladright.
Can you just talk us through the provision for the landscaping plan? Because I know that they are incredibly expensive and this is just a tiny little nature strip, really. Can we just have a look at that wording? Because there seem to be a lot of things there. Sorry, Amanda, could you please?
Just to the landscaping requirements, please.
Condition 2, yeah.
Mrs. Stevenson, would you like to speak to that?
Through you, Mayor. The requirement for a landscaping plan is it doesn't have to be done by a landscape architect. It just needs to be done to a level that provides the information that is required. The key issues for a site like this, in particular in relation to the discretion that is triggered regarding the parking forward of the building line, is that it needs to provide the outcomes required under the performance criteria. And so the key elements here are ensuring that we have sufficient information about the landscaping that's proposed and the detail around that, which is spelt out in that condition. And the main ones really is going to be under F, Roman numeral I and Roman numeral II, in terms of the types of landscaping and the depth of that landscaping. And so in this particular case, we're not talking significant amounts of landscaping because the area is fairly small. So I don't envisage that the ability for the applicant to provide a landscaping plan to meet this condition would be excessive or costly.
The Deputy Mayor.
I just don't understand, if they're putting a fence, how they can also be putting in perennial trees and shrubs and understory and ground cover plants.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. So the idea is that those plants are behind the fence but would grow higher than the fence, so they contribute to the softening of the landscaping. So fences are a hard built form, if you like, and the purpose of the landscaping is to soften that, particularly where you have a fence that is going to have transparency. You're having the plants behind that, which provides the softening, and it also allows some. You have a mixture of plants, which will grow higher than the fence to provide screening and softening as well. So it's about screening, but it's also about softening the landscape. The streetscape. So that clause, if you refer back to the requirements for this scheme, it is about providing streetscape and softening that, as well as providing screening from a visual perspective. So it has a combination of roles.
And can I just clarify?
Deputy Mayor.
Can I just clarify? You said it didn't need to be a qualified landscape architect, but it says there prepared by a qualified landscape architect. So could we please amend that? Because I know this came up for me and it was very expensive.
So, Ms. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. It does say in the condition, or a suitably experienced landscape professional. So that does provide for an alternative. I'm in the hands of the councillors as to what they would like to do, but it does provide an alternative there.
Yeah.
Deputy Mayor.
I think the word suitably experienced landscape professional is sufficient.
So are you suggesting that you'd like to propose to Councillor Bain as the mover to remove the words must be prepared by a suitably... So you want to remove the words a qualified landscape architect so that it just reads a detailed landscaping plan must be prepared by a suitably experienced landscape professional?
Yep, because it will prevent confusion.
Councillor Bain, are you happy with that amendment?
Well, I think a suitably experienced landscape professional would cover a qualified landscape architect, so for that reason I'm happy with removing it.
Okay. So... Okay, how do we deal with this? We can just remove that those words from... Could you just remove those words? Thank you. Okay, further discussions on this. I'm really hoping that we could move this forward. Mrs. Stevenson.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. We still have to review the other conditions that make reference to the visitor parking now that we have removed the requirement for visitor parking. So if it's okay, we keep going through the conditions to find the extra ones that need to be amended.
Yep, let's do that and then we'll go to any other issues that anyone's identified.
Sorry, can you just slow down a slide for me there? So in that condition number 4 where it has under D signage that for visitor and unit parking spaces, just remove the words visitor and. So it's just signage for unit parking spaces. Yep, that's
there's
fine.
No turning bay area, is there? So
no, but it's only as applicable, so yeah, no. Won't matter if there isn't one. So the start of works notice one's fine. So condition 6, A will need to be deleted because there's no visitor parking sign.
And then renumber accordingly.
Yep, that one's fine. That one, they're all fine. That one will be fine. That one will be fine. Yep, that's all good. Then you need to delete condition 13. And renumber, obviously.
Yep. Okay, further discussion, Councillor Fox.
I had a question right at the beginning, and I did hear you say that I'd be next, but after certain people. And I'm concerned now that we're removing the visitor parking. Is that going to make it possible for cars to have the manoeuvrability on the site and to go out of the property in a forward direction? And is the landscaping going to interfere with their visibility if they're going either forward or backward off the property?
Mr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. As I explained earlier, the removal of the P5 parking space will not provide for manoeuvring on site for the vehicles parked in the P4 and P3 spaces to be able to turn and exit the property in a forward direction, because there isn't sufficient room. So they will still be required, unless they do an 18-point turn, would need to exit the property reversing. The width of the access is standard width, although there is some room either side of the access that wouldn't include landscaping because of the turning areas required for the parking spaces in P2 and P1 at the front. So it's likely that the landscaping could be designed in a way to ensure that it doesn't have a significant impact on site distances, but you could also include something in the landscaping plan condition to require the landscaping plan to ensure that the species chosen would not impact site distances.
Thank you. Councillor Fox?
I would like to consider that, and I'm wondering if our engineer might have some comment on that, if he's able to.
I doubt it. I don't know that he's listening. Hello, Mr. Mackey. Ms. Stevenson, would you like to repeat your question for Mr. Mackey, please?
Through you, Mayor. It wasn't really a question. Councillor Fox was asking the question as to whether or not the proposed landscaping would have an impact on vehicles exiting the driveway, particularly if they're still required to reverse. And I suggested that it's possible that they could amend the landscaping plan condition to include a requirement for the species and the location to take into consideration potential impacts on site distance. And Councillor Fox asked the engineer whether or not that might be possible.
Yeah, that's you, Mr. Mackey.
Through you, Mayor, I don't know. I don't know if that is possible. I can ask our roads engineer. Would that be right?
I feel like there's a Christmas award coming on here somewhere. Okay, Mrs. Stevenson?
Through you, Mayor. I think it would be reasonable to put something in the condition because we can ensure then that the development engineers also look at the landscaping plan to ensure that there isn't anything in it that would have a significant impact on the site distance requirements. And I think the landscaping could be done in a way that would minimise those impacts, but if there's nothing in the condition, then there won't be that checkpoint. So I think if that is a concern, and in, as I explained, it will still rely upon reversing from that those car parks, in which case the site distance should be maximised to the most possible. So,
thank you. So are you suggesting a further amendment to one of the conditions to incorporate that? Could you share that with us, please?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it would be condition 2, which is the landscaping plan condition. And it probably would be... So I would suggest under F, where we've got 1 and 2, that maybe we put a third one, which would be... Let me think. Frontage requirements, including ensuring any proposed planting minimises impacts on site distance from the proposed access. It's a bit off the top of my head, but I think that would probably be sufficient to deal with it.
Thank you. Councillor Bain, are you happy with that?
I'm happy with that. Just a question. You'll also have the crossover where there'll be no planting before you reach the road as well, won't you? So you'll have that buffer.
Mrs. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that is true, is that you will obviously be leaving the site onto the crossover before you get to the road proper. There would be a footpath and things there as well, so you obviously have to worry about pedestrians. Yeah. So I think having... I don't think it's a big deal, yeah. But just having a part in the condition, yeah. I think just make sure it gets thought about at the design stage, that's all.
Happy.
Thank you. Any further discussion, questions? Councillor Cordova.
Are we up to the part of when should I make a contribution to say what I think of it? Is now a good time for it? Not yet, because it hasn't yet been moved, has it?
Let's move the motion. Okay, so I've got a mover in Councillor Bain. I'm looking for a seconder. I've got it in Councillor Street. Councillor Bain, did you want to speak again? No? Okay, so... all right, contributions on the alternative recommendation. I'm just going to, not that I wish to stifle debate, I'd just like to point out that it's 7:30 and as soon as this is done we will have a brief comfort break. So if that's an incentive to truncate these contributions, I don't know what else is. So contributions on this motion. Councillor Cordova, you foreshadowed you wanted to speak. No one else has got their lights on. Over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. The current proposal, in my opinion and in the opinion of the original planner who assessed this development application, was and is, from my perspective, that it does not comply with the zone purpose statement and the local character and the local area objectives, particularly the requirement for parking to be located behind the building line and safe access and appropriate vehicle manoeuvring. The design, therefore, does not demonstrate a high-quality built form and optimised residential amenity, which is inconsistent with the intent and objectives of the inner residential zone. So I genuinely hope that, because obviously I can see the writing on the wall, I know I don't have the numbers here, obviously, but I hope genuinely that this can be achieved in a really good way, and I hope genuinely that it comes good, both for the proponent and, of course, for the neighbourhood in general. I hope that this can be achieved in a way that's as sensitive as possible, but the reality is we don't have a traffic impact assessment. We're just going off, we hope that everything's going to be okay. I will be more comfortable voting against this proposal because I know that, I really want the urban built environment to be a place that complies with the planning scheme that we've all agreed upon and also... that has good residential amenity. And so, when people come to me saying, oh, why are there, extra cars parking on the street that shouldn't be there and, are there safety concerns with people trying to manoeuvre in areas they can't, I'll feel more comfortable having known that I said, I expressed my reservation about this particular one in accordance with the planning assessment officer who looked at this in some detail. So... that's why I'll be voting against this, but I can see which way it's going, and I do wish everyone well.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick one from me. Thanks, everyone, for their contributions. A lot of my questions were answered previously. It has conflicted me, and this planning on the fly has been a real struggle to listen to and go through each one and make little changes here and there. I'm not happy with a few of the things. I hear what Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox have raised during the meeting, and I do have some sentiments with that. Just a point that Councillor Cordova said then, how many times you've been contacted by people in our community when people having to reverse onto streets and they have no line of sight, and they ask us if we can put like a yellow line on the road. I can see things like this happening with this development. But I will be just still conflicted. I'm going to make my decision up which way I'm going to go because, yeah, I can see the pros and the cons and, I'll make my decision very soon.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Any further contributions? Councillor Bain, did you want to close debate? So I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Street. All those in favour? Against? Okay, a show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Street, Gladewright and Reet, and those against, is Councillors Fox, Cordova and Midgley. The motion is carried. Can I just say thank you very much to everyone for their patience. Thank you, Mrs Stevenson, for your patience in answering those many questions. Greatly appreciated. The Planning Authority now adjourns at 7:36 p.m. I will open the session. Open session of council will recommence at 7:36 p.m. But having said that, we'll just take a 10-minute comfort break, get yourselves a cup of tea, and we will be back here at 7:45, please. Thank you. Is nearly... Oh, yes, Mr. Smee is over there pressing the button. Thank you. Can we just confirm that the recording was... has started? Thank you. I will warn you, I think I have lost the power of speech, so we will... we will go on. So, Stuart has had to... has had no need to be here, so we've sent him on his merry way. So, the open session of council is coming back at 7:47 p.m. To anyone who is listening to this, thank you for your patience. We are now on page 47, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We're now on officers' reports to councils, and we've got TAS Fire Service proposal on Beretta Reserve with a recommendation on page 50, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So, as we can see, the recommendation is to provide in-principle support for the development of a volunteer fire and SES station at Beretta Reserve, subject to TasFire undertaking a feasibility to address the range of impacts, which are listed in the report. For this, staff have noted considerable community benefits. The fact that there is no dedicated SES facility in Kingborough other than Bruny Island. The proposal for the future of this would be an amalgamation of Snug and Margate Fire Brigades with a purpose-built facility, and that would include features that are not currently available at existing locations. And as the report states, this is just really the recommendation to get the ball rolling. There's a lot of statutory development approvals and things to consider, and I guess, yeah, would staff like to explain anything else that they see that would be a benefit in us doing this, and then sort of where to from here in regards to the next stages, please?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I think it's fair to say that there are a number of issues in relation to this site. It's not a perfect site. However, we do feel that it... is an initiative that brings considerable community benefit and therefore one that council should seriously look at in terms of support. However, there is a lot of work to be done before this can become a reality, and from a TasFire perspective, you know, they just want to know, has council got an appetite for this particular development at this site? Yes or no, and if no, they'll look elsewhere, and if yes, then they'll commit the resources required to fully investigate it.
Councillor Midgley.
No more.
Councillor Fox.
I'm fully supportive of this proposal just to investigate. I only have one question, and whether they would have water and sewerage access in this location.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. I believe that there are both water and sewer lines in the proximity, and I would assume that that would be available to them to connect to. However, that, again, would need to form part of the feasibility study.
Any further discussions? I've just got one question, Mr. Smee. The location that is outlined on the picture on page 48. Recently, when I was down at Beretta, that area had a large number of what are they called, skip bins located there, from which looked to be one of the commercial providers of the skip bins seemed to be parking their bins there. Is that just, what's that situation?
We were approached, or the operators of the waste transfer station were approached by the company that owns those skip bins looking for a place to park them. And as the land was not being used, consent was given to that. However, if this was to develop, they would need to go elsewhere.
And are they paying anything for the privilege of putting their bins at a very handy location for them?
Mayor, I'm not aware of the conditions of the arrangement. I would need to take that on notice.
If you could please, that would be useful for when we come back to this. Are there any further discussions? Councillor Midgley, did you want to close debate? No. I'm going to put the recommendation then, moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 54, Kelvin and Oval Lights, with a recommendation on page 55, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Cordova and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very good proposal to upgrade the lights. So the funding allocation of $85,000 be provided from Council's 25-26 capital program to enable the upgrade of lights, poles and footings at Kelvin and Oval. I'll take the report as read, and I'm looking forward to contributions from my colleagues, but I think it's a good proposal and I'm very proud to be able to move it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. A question regarding the figure of $85,000. So we'll be taking it out of the capital program, and the report foreshadows that something will have to give. Can I get a report on what might give and the impact of that?
Mr. Mackey is sitting there looking very eager and keen and prepared.
Yeah, prepared.
Mr. Mackey.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Through you, Mayor. We're currently reassessing the capital plan, and we'll have to make a determination of which program or projects we'll have to move to accommodate that.
Right, so we don't have any
anything at this point.
Okay. Look, I'm in favour of this. I think it's a great idea. I actually want to thank council officers for squeezing this in, and I realise that if we didn't, it's probably going to cost us a lot more later. And we have a narrow window of opportunity with the grant funding lapsing to get in now. Can I ask, it appears that this is a little bit unplanned for, so how does that work? Can you explain why we're... It's been on the cards for a while. It has Fed funding, but we're pulling it out of capital, unallocated capital works now. I get the impression it hasn't been planned for, or have they rushed it along? What's happening?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So the Taruna Football Club got quotes for the upgrade of the lights, and the funding was provided to the club, who then, when it came to managing the project, asked council to manage the project, and so the funds came to us. Mm. When we did the tendering process for a design and construct, it became evident that you couldn't simply put the new lights on the existing poles. Both the poles and the footings needed upgrading.
Right.
So, yes, it was only when we reached a point fairly well down the track that it has emerged that the funding that the club obtained wasn't sufficient to cover the actual work. So, to be fair to them, you know, they did their due diligence to the best that they could in terms of obtaining a quote to cover the works, but they weren't to know that the poles and footings needed upgrading.
Right, okay, thank you.
Councillor Antoli.
Look, I support it, and I think it's a good initiative. I'm disappointing that it's on us to fix, but it's a leveraged investment, because it's not insubstantial, but overall it's a smaller investment now than if we were to let it go in about 5 years' time.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, just a question. Said the current lights were due to be replaced soon, or in a few years. Do we have an idea how long we might get out of the new ones?
Mr.
Mr. Smee.
So the existing lights were put in 2014. Generally, lights will last about 10 years and then they start to lose their lux level. So 10 years is about the life, and then you can eke out a few more years, but with diminishing lux levels. These newer lights will have a greater asset life, but I would expect 10 to 15 years is what we're looking at.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question around the price. It says here that we've gone out to tenders. Does the responses we got on the tenders include the whole package of work? So we're pretty confident in that $250 cost?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we are. The additional $100,000 required is all-encompassing to complete the job. So with the $15,000 that the club are putting in, $85,000 from council, we're very confident that that will enable the project to be completed.
Any further contributions? Just a brief one from me. I just wanted to acknowledge, I think strategically this is a sound way to deal with this, because otherwise if we're going to have to fund these in the near future anyway, why not take advantage of the grant funds from the state government that are available? But also just wanted to acknowledge the club's work in lots of sausage sizzles and things like that, which has enabled them to contribute some $15,000 towards the project as well. And it's certainly not, that's a lot of sausages. So I think we should acknowledge that and look forward to seeing this move forward. Who moved this? Councillor Cordova. Anything further to say? Okay, thank you. I will put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to the financial report on page 56, with a recommendation on page 58. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So the financial report, August 2025, the report tells us that the initial four-year budgeted underlying loss of 2.524 has decreased by 170,000 down to 2.354, which is a good start. The main things that have impacted that on the revenue side is the statutory fees and fines, $229,000 over budget, and that's due to some large development applications and the payment of fees for an associated large development. And the other one that's going great guns is the user fees, $117,000 over budget, with a fair portion of that attributed to the Kingborough Sports Centre. And also interest income is $76,000 over budget after the first 2 months. And the expenditure side, most of that is related to cash flow at the moment, so no major concerns there, apart from some of the employee costs are a bit over budget, particularly in the works department area. But the report tells us that a lot of that is due to capital works programs, and we'll see that hopefully balance out over the coming months. So happy to recommend the report.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Spinks? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions regarding the long-term financial plan update and the asset management plan. Any updates on those, please?
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor. At the risk of stealing Mr. Mackey's words, in relation to the asset management plan, so we're getting some external assistance. We've commenced that work. But as Mr. Mackey sort of advised the audit panel at its last meeting, we do expect this to be a program of work for probably 12 to 18 months. So if we think about the next budget cycle, we are expecting to have a higher level of maturity than we currently do, but the work will still need to be done. In relation to the financial plan, that's effectively on hold pending the work of the asset management plan. So one is a very key input into the other, and so the latter one is currently on hold. And that's with the approval of the audit panel as well.
Any further questions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question again about the capital works. I note that the
report says that even though we're a bit underspent to date, because it's typical for the start of the year, we're confident that there won't be that much slippage. Can I ask what major projects we have around the corner that could potentially possibly result in slippage or delays? Is there anything that we should be aware of? Because we're trying to do a lot of catch-up, as Mr. Mackey well understands.
Mr. Mackey.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to... through you, Mayor. I'm just trying to think whether or not...
Don't know what you were drinking during the morning, during the evening,
not a lot
break.
Of sleep last night, to be honest. Yeah, look, there's no projects that are jumping out at me. One that is I'm just dealing with at the moment is the Browns Road reconstruction and making sure that we get the road permit around that, so there's still some work to do on that. Obviously, that's a significant project. We've got to keep a close eye on that. But outside of that, there's no major projects that come to mind regarding slippage.
Okay, thank you. It's good to see you've got an endearing way about yourself. Well done.
It's going to go down in folklore history, I think, your contributions this meeting. Thank you, Mr. Mackey. Any further questions? Otherwise, I will... Councillor Fox.
I'm disturbed by Mr. Smee's comments. Spink, sorry.
Mr. Smee looked very confused.
Sorry. I feel... The answer to the question about the long-term financial plan and the asset management plan, in that they were going to take 12 to 18 months and we're getting exterior help, that means it's going to be outside the ambit of this council. Because we've only got another 12 months to go in this position. So the last 4 years that we've been trying to grapple with asset management and long-term financial plans, we've basically done nothing, and that is quite concerning to me. I thought we would try to get this out of the way before the election, not after the election.
Mr. Spinks,
that's not even a question. That's a passionate statement.
Mr. Spinks, I'd like to respond to the passionate statement.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I think that the short answer is just simply that... we're just not in a mature space in the asset management area, and we've got an awful lot of catching up to do. We're trying to fast track as best we can, and that's where the external help comes into play. I know Mr. Mackey's been speaking to other councils as well to see ascertain what sort of worked best for them and sort of in their pursuits of developing their asset management plans. But the short answer is we've got a lot of work to do. And that just simply takes time. I'm not sure I can add any more to that. I feel like in the budget workshops we've been having the last couple of years, I think we've sort of made mention of this fact very often, that we need to increase our maturity. And the fact that we've sort of taken a decision to delay the financial plan as a result of the asset management plan, I think, has also been communicated several times that I can think of in terms of budget papers that have gone out for workshops and other things like that. So, and as I say, it's been done with the endorsement of the audit panel, who in fact, it was their recommendation that we don't try and complete the financial plan until the asset work is done. But I'm not sure I can add any more. It's just simply there's a lot of work to do.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I just want to say thank you for that response. I'm personally disappointed, but I can understand, and I think we're probably better off being thorough than trying to do it in a hurry. But even 18 months, I'm just... maybe many of us won't be around the table anymore, so never mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? If not, I will put the recommendation. Councillor Bain, you don't want to sum up? So it's moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 77, appendices, with the recommendation on the same page. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Midgley. Any questions on the appendices?
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Question. I'm very sorry that I missed the model train show. That sounds awesome. But my question.
It was really cool.
Was it so
it
good?
Was really cool.
Yeah.
Some of you may laugh. I've got photos. I can share them with you. It was a lot of fun.
I would love to see those. Thank you, Mayor. I'm a big fan of the model train show, to be honest.
I could do a slideshow.
Well, maybe a workshop. We could do a workshop on it. My question is actually about Applebox Studio and the meeting on the 20th of August with Emma Wilson and Jags Goldsmith. Mm-hmm. So I'm aware broadly of Applebox Studios, their objectives and what they're doing, but what specifically was that meeting about? And I'm very excited if it's to promote the arts within Kingborough.
So they just wanted me to be aware of their organisation. So for those who aren't familiar with them, they're a not-for-profit who are seeking to advance sort of training opportunities and other opportunities for people in the arts, particularly in they've actually combined sort of film and television and video gaming as well, because they noticed that there was a lack of opportunities for people who wanted to get into creating video games, and they were particularly excited to share with me that they just it was a couple of days after they came to see me. They had a 48-hour film festival and they screened it at Kingston Beach Hall, because both Emma and Jags are local residents. And so apparently that they had about 100 people who came along to that event, and the idea was that, people were given a theme, and I think they can't remember how many entries they had off the top of my head. They were given a theme, and then on the Friday night of a weekend at a certain time, they were then told that here are some specific things that you need to work into your film, and then they had literally 48 hours to film, edit, and produce the film. And then the films were shown at the thing at the event. So it was a lovely local event. Anyway, they're planning more things like that, and it was really really interesting to see what they're doing. And of course, I did let them know that if they do need to use any of the facilities for the hub and that sort of thing, that we have a mayoral donations program that is for a whole range of different not-for-profits to come and ask for assistance with. So there might be something in the future that they might want some help with.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Mayor. That sounds great. My only other question was about the Margate Shopping Centre and the Callis Group. Are there any updates that can be shared publicly about the progression at the Margate Shopping Centre?
Yep. So the finalised plans, we will be expecting a new DA in the coming weeks. So that is for the Woolworths supermarket and then some other shops at the front of the supermarket area and facilities and so on. They're able to share with us their revised parking plans that include some parking spaces with coverage over them, so canopies similar to what is going to be constructed at the Spring Farm Shopping Centre. We're hoping to have that DA with us very, very shortly. It also incorporates some underground parking as well that they're doing. So I can't remember the total number of parking spots off the top of my head, but certainly enough to service that that whole facility. Any further questions? If not, we will move on. So I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to page 16, notices of motion. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion. And page 77, confirmation of minutes to be dealt with in closed session, is confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and rate rebate conservation covenant. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Dean. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with the Kingborough Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.